As Anya moved off down the trail, she could have kicked herself for letting the events play out the way they had back in the San village. If she hadn't tried to force the issue, she might still be there, instead of wandering the outskirts of the village, trying to come up with some excuse for returning that wouldn't get her immediately thrown out again.
Was that a scream?
She glanced around, but didn't see anything besides the same thick grass and low trees that she'd been walking through for several minutes.
Did I imagine it?
Anya turned in a slow circle, straining to catch the sound again.
Lion!
The cry had come from somewhere to her right, on the other side of the thicket of monkey thorn trees. Anya took off at a run, drawing her sword as she went. As she made her way between the trees, she prayed she'd be in time. Finally, she emerged into a small clearing. High in an isolated jackalberry tree, a young boy clung to the branches, his face wet with tears as he stared in horror at the lion below him. The beast stood on its hind legs, its body braced against the tree trunk as it swiped at him. The tree shook, threatening to unseat the boy and send him spilling to the ground. The lion turned to look at Anya. It was a healthy-looking specimen with a great black mane. Anya guessed it to be in the neighborhood of 400 pounds and roughly 8 to 9 feet in length.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Anya began to back away, waving her hand in a come-and-get-it gesture. The lion watched her for a moment and then turned back toward the tree.
Oh, no, you don't.
Hey, Furface! Over here!
Anya waved her hands over her head to create a bigger target. That got the lion's attention. It whirled back around, no doubt letting her know just who was the king of beasts and who was the prey. Anya wasn't having any of it.
Hey, Furface, come on!
She brandished her sword, keeping the attention firmly on her as she slowly began backing away again. This time, the lion advanced in her direction.
What's the matter? Afraid of little old me?
A glance over the lion's head showed the boy carefully climbing down out of the tree.
Run! Run and don't look back!
Even if the boy didn't understand Anya's words, he got her meaning. He was off like a shot, disappearing into the undergrowth. The lion didn't even notice. It began to advance slowly in her direction, one step at a time. Every instinct screamed at her to turn and run, but she knew she wouldn't make it 10 yards if she was foolish enough to try. The lion rushed forward. Anya stood her ground. She stepped to the side and struck. Blood flew. Anya spun away from the lion as it recoiled in pain. There was a large monkey thorn tree directly in front of her with a trunk thick enough to protect her back. Anya sprinted for the tree. She had only seconds to be ready for the lion's next charge. She could almost feel the lion rushing toward her unprotected back. She reached the tree and spun. The blade slashed into the big cat's shoulder. The lion backed off and fixed its stare on her.
This is it. It's going to charge.
Anya readied herself, but to her surprise, it didn't come. San tribesmen appeared out of nowhere to stand on either side of her, their wooden spears thrust out in front of them. The San warriors roared right back, shaking their spears and jumping up and down. Anya joined in, brandishing her sword in front of her. It was too much for the lion. It turned and disappeared into the brush. Anya sagged in relief. The San tribesmen were apparently as happy at the lion's departure as she was. In the resulting confusion, Anya released her sword back into the otherwhere when she thought no one was looking. A small form darted between the cheering men and slammed into her legs. Anya looked down to find the boy she'd saved from the tree hugging her tightly about the waist. She bent down and hugged him back, just as thankful as he was to be still alive. Though she couldn't understand anything they said, the warriors made it clear through hand gestures that they wanted her to follow them back to the village. Given that they were her link to the mysterious elephant graveyard, Anya was more than happy to oblige. They threw a banquet that night in Anya's honor. A large bonfire had been built at the center of the village, and the San gathered in a group as the feast was being prepared. The main course was to be the eland Anya had seen the women skinning earlier that afternoon. the antelope roasted over a crackling fire. Several of the women were gathered in a loose circle around the bonfire, including the mother of the boy Anya had rescued, a woman a few years younger than herself, named Balanka. The women wore patterned headbands and wreaths of beaded necklaces and bangles at their ankles and wrists. Balanka brought Anya a plate heaped high with antelope meat and roasted vegetables. The meat was tender, succulent, and came apart in her fingers. It was absolutely delicious. As Anya was finishing the last of her meal, Mamegi rose.
Mimi ni taheshimu mwa namke na haditi.
Mimege wants to honor you with a story.
Tell him I would be honored.
Angawiza kuwa keheshimiwa. He would tell us the story of how the elephant came to be.
Mimi nitakuambia.
Long ago, when the world was young, the first people lived in harmony with the world and the rest of its inhabitants, enjoying the life that the twin gods had given them. They walked and talked and played in the valley without fear. One day, several of them were out walking when they heard a cry for help. Following the sound, they at last came to a large mud hole near the banks of the great river. In the middle of the mud hole was an animal they had never seen before. It was about the size of a hippopotamus, with a large nose and ears that were too big for its body, but only a little. "Please help me," the animal cried upon seeing the first people standing on the bank above the mud hole. "I'm stuck." Sosa, the leader of the group, hated to see an animal in pain, and so he quickly convinced the others that they should free the strange-looking beast. Very carefully, the four of them climbed down the bank to the edge of the mud hole. They made sure to stay on firm ground, not wanting to get stuck themselves, and got behind the animal. They pushed and pushed and pushed to no avail. The sun was hot that day, and it gradually began to leach the color out of the poor animal's hide as they worked. Before long, its pebbly skin went from being dark gray to light gray to nearly white. And still, the first people were unable to free the great beast. Finally, Sosa had an idea. He left one of his companions to push it from behind and placed the other two on either side of the animal, instructing them to pull on his ears. Sosa himself went around to the front and grasped hold of the animal's nose. "I am sorry, but this is the only way I can think of to free you from the mud," he told the animal. "I don't mind," came the reply, "as long as you get me out of here." So Sosa counted to three, and on the final count, his friends pushed and pulled with all their might. "Harder!" Sosa cried, and his friends obeyed. They were pulling so hard that the animal's ears and nose began to stretch, growing larger and longer with every tug. Seeing this, Sosa was about to tell his friends to stop when the animal cried, "No, don't stop! I am almost free!" And so, the first people did as they were told. They pushed and pulled harder and harder until the mud released the animal and it stumbled forward onto dry ground. But the damage had been done. The animal's nose was no longer than Sosa's arm, and his ears were as big as boulders. Sosa knew that the animal would be sad when it saw itself in the watering hole later that day. So he acted quickly to save it some pain. "Look at you," he cried in wonder. "Out of the mud and muck comes a beautiful new creature. I name you Elephant and declare you a friend of the first people as long as you live." And so, from that day forth, the first people and the elephant were as close as family.
Numegi caught Anya's eye and winked, which she took as a good sign. Perhaps she might get the information she needed from them after all. The celebration eventually came to an end, and Tolo offered to show her to a hut where she could sleep for the evening. Anya tried to refuse, upset that she might be evicting someone else, but Tolo assured her that the small shelter had been empty. Nemso, the boy she'd rescued, was waiting for her outside the hut she would be using. In his hands, he had a cloth-covered bundle, which he handed to Anya.
Mumege would like to express his thanks and appreciation, and so would Nemso. They offer this gift as a token of their respect and a hope that you will remain a friend to the First People even longer than the elephant has.
Anya smiled, trying to put the boy at ease. Taking off her baseball cap, she held it out to Nemso.
Where I come from, it is the visitor that offers the gift, not the host. In this case, however, I will make an exception, provided you accept this gift from me in return.
Nemso's eyes grew wide as he listened to Tolo translate. He stared at the cap, then looked up at Anya.
For me?
Yes, for you.
Anya showed Nemso how to adjust the strap for fit, and then watched him race off, eager to show his friends what he'd received.
He was fortunate you were there today.
I was happy to help.
Happy to get in Mamege's good graces again as well.
I didn't think about that. I simply acted to save the boy's life.
Of course. I did not mean to imply otherwise. But even you must admit that the twin gods have smiled on you today. It is not every day that you be to save the village elder's only grandson.
Grandson?
We will talk more about Humphrey in the morning, eh, Anya? Good night.
And with that, he moved off into the darkness, leaving Anya with a host of new questions. A few more days, and she'd be that much closer to unraveling what had happened to Humphrey's expedition. The hut contained nothing more than a small bed of elan skins stretched over a pile of dried grasses. Anya sat on it gratefully. It had been a long, exhausting day in more ways than one, and she was ready to get some much-needed rest. But first, there was one more task to take care of. Under the light of her flashlight, Anya carefully unwrapped the package Nemso had given her. Inside the bundle of animal skins was an intricately decorated horn made from what could only be the tusk of an elephant. The exterior was covered with carved symbols, reminding Anya of rock art she'd seen at digs in other parts of the world. The images were clearly telling a story, but she wasn't familiar enough with San folklore to know exactly what was being represented. Both ends of the tusk were capped with what appeared to be a plug of silver, which made her pause.
The San aren't metal workers. Where did the silver come from?
Given the unique nature of the item, as well as its relative worth, Anya assumed that it was really from Mamegi, rather than Nemso. After Mamegi's public disapproval of her interest in the elephant graveyard earlier that day, she couldn't see him telling her what she wanted to know outright. That might cause strife with his people.
But passing me some information on the sly through his grandson? That makes perfect sense.
Anya tried to pull the caps off, but the seals were too solidly set in place, and there was no way she was going to be able to get them loose without tools. She bent closer to get a better look at the larger of the two caps, and noticed a thin seam running down the exterior of the tusk, away from the cap. It looked too straight to be of natural origin. The first seam bisected several others running in different directions across the surface of the piece. Anya had solved too many puzzle boxes, secret containers, and carefully constructed hiding places not to recognize one when she saw it.
All I have to do is figure out how to open it.
Anya tried twisting, turning, pushing, and pulling the various sections of the tusk, hoping to find a way to release the two sections, but nothing seemed to work. It was only after nearly a half hour of experimentation that she figured it out. She pushed down on opposite sections with the thumbs of each hand, while simultaneously twisting the ends in opposite directions, and pulled them apart. The two halves separated without a sound, revealing the hollow interior. Inside was a rolled piece of tanned animal skin. It reminded her of the cloth the villagers used for their clothing. This piece was small, however, only about 2 inches wide and 6 inches long when unrolled. A series of symbols, five in all, had been drawn on one side of the cloth in what looked to Anya to be charcoal. In order, from top to bottom, Anya saw an antelope, a round disc with lines coming out of it that was probably the sun, three wavy lines that reminded Anya of water, an obvious representation of an elephant, and what she thought was a snake. They were simple, even primitive in nature.
But what does it mean?
Anya tried to find a connection between them, but aside from the fact that they were all natural instead of man-made objects, she didn't see one. She tried to view them as a pictorial, but couldn't come up with any kind of story that made sense, never mind telling her something she didn't already know about the location of the elephant graveyard and what had happened to Humphrey's expedition. After puzzling over them for another 20 minutes, she finally gave up. She might have a better chance of unraveling the puzzle in the morning, after a good night's sleep. With her thoughts still churning, she lay down to try to get some rest. A hand touched Anya's shoulder, bringing her out of her sleep. She opened her eyes to find the young boy's mother, Balanka, leaning over her. Anya opened her mouth to say something, but the other woman quickly shook her head and put a finger vertically over her own lips.
Who is she worried will hear?
With a few quick gestures, Balanka made it clear to Anya that she should put her things together and follow her. Intrigued, Anya did as she was asked. She always slept clothed in the field, so all she needed to do was pull on her boots and toss the souvenirs and gifts she'd been given at the ceremony last night into her backpack. As quietly as a ghost, Balanka slipped out of the hut. Anya followed. In the gray dimness of the pre-dawn light, the village seemed deserted. Even the cooking fires were still banked from the night before. Balanka looked around nervously. Anya got the sense that she was worried about being seen with her, and could only come up with one reason why that might be the case. Balanka knew something about the elephant graveyard. Satisfied that they were alone, Balanka slipped between several huts until she reached the edge of the village, and then set out across the scrubland toward a large grove of monkey thorn trees. Intrigued, Anya hustled to catch up. Once they were out of earshot of the village, Anya broke the silence.
Where are we going?
Balanka gestured at the trees ahead of them. Or maybe it was the mountain in the distance. Anya wasn't sure. She wasn't even sure Balanka had understood her question.
Nothing to do but follow along, it seems.
15 minutes later, they reached the grove of trees. They were in a thick tangle of intertwining trunks, the space between and surrounding them filled with waist-high growths of thorny bushes with spines that looked as big as her pinky finger. So thick was the growth that the copse looked completely impassable. Thankfully, Balanka didn't try to fight her way through it. Instead, she led Anya around the side, following the line of trees, until they were no longer within sight of the village behind them. Balanka clearly knew where she was going. Not once did she hesitate or look around as if trying to find a particular landmark. Anya's heart sank when Balanka finally came to a stop, facing a particularly nasty-looking section of dense and thorny undergrowth. The young tribeswoman smiled, pointed at Anya, and then pointed at the undergrowth.
You want me to go in there?
The tribeswoman pointed again, this time more forcefully.
No way, not a chance. How am I supposed to go through that?
Tazama!
Balanka stomped over to where Anya was standing. She got directly behind Anya and peered over her shoulder. Balanka put her hands on either side of Anya's head and gently rotated it a few degrees to the left. Just like that, a route through the trees came into view. It wasn't a narrow trail either. This was a full-fledged thoroughfare by nature's standards, a pathway wide enough to let something the size of an elephant pass through it without difficulty.
Yes! Oh!
Anya spun around and hugged the other woman. Balanka hugged her back.
The entrance to the elephant graveyard.
The combination of sunlight and shadow had created the illusion that the thicket ahead of her was as dense and overgrown as everywhere else. It was an amazing piece of natural camouflage. Perhaps too good. Struck by a sudden suspicion, Anya walked forward until she passed through the outer edge of the undergrowth, and then turned to look back the way she had come. From this side, the ruins of the arch forming the opening she had just come through were clearly visible. So, too, were the remains of the low wall that ran out from either side of that arch and formed the outer edge of the thicket of trees that she and Belanka had just been following. Maybe the vegetation had simply grown out of control since the structure had fallen into ruin, or perhaps it had been planted like that intentionally. Either way, the structure was all but hidden by dense undergrowth. Anya retraced her steps and tried to get the San tribeswoman to join her. Belanka, however, refused to set foot beneath the arch. Anya did her best to reassure her that everything would be fine, a not-so-simple task when hand gestures and facial expressions are all you have to work with, but Belanka steadfastly refused. In the end, Anya was forced to go on alone. She found the first piece of bone about 20 feet beyond the archway. A flash of white caught her eye, and when she walked over to it, she discovered an elephant skull partially hidden in the long grass. After examining it, Anya suspected it had belonged to a juvenile that had died far from its prime. As she continued on, she spotted bones with increased regularity. It wasn't long before she was walking through a landscape dotted with rib cages, thigh bones, and massive skulls. Many of the bones were yellow with age, some so old that when she brushed against them, they crumbled apart. To know all of these majestic animals had found their way here when their time had come was both eerie and somehow beautiful at the same time. As she squatted down beside a particularly oversized skull, hoping to get a better look, Anya was distracted by something flapping at the base of a bush several yards away. When she walked over to investigate, she discovered a beat-up old fedora trapped between the branches of the bush, fluttering back and forth in the light breeze. She felt her pulse racing as she turned the hat over and looked inside. There, on the hatband lining the interior, were a pair of faded initials.
R.H. Robert Humphrey.
Just to be sure, Anya pulled out the photograph of Humphrey. In the picture, the famed explorer gazed out at the camera from under the brim of a dark fedora. Anya stood there, overcome with a feeling of déjà vu. Anya carefully folded the fedora and slipped the hat inside her pack for safekeeping. Rising, Anya felt a presence at her back. Thinking her guide had decided to join her after all, she turned around to thank her for bringing her to this place. The comment on her lips died before she could give voice to it. The largest bull elephant Anya had ever seen stood roughly a dozen feet away beneath the sheltering boughs of a eucalyptus tree. It was at least twice her height and probably weighed 12 or 13,000 pounds. Its tusks were enormous, a good 3 feet or more long and at least as thick as her thigh. The tusks alone would make this an attractive target for any poacher in the vicinity. But where most elephants ranged from light to battleship gray, this particular specimen was white as a ghost. From the tip of its trunk to the end of its tail, Anya stared in wonder.
It has to be an albino. How did it survive into adulthood? Body parts from albino animals are highly prized in African society. Witch doctors believe they lend added potency to potions or spells. Anyone bringing down this animal would make a fortune.
As if sensing her thoughts, the elephant grew agitated. It shifted from foot to foot, shaking the ground.
Easy there, Tantor.
But the sound of her voice seemed to do just the opposite. The elephant began to swing its trunk back and forth, smashing the vegetation on either side of it with what, from Anya's perspective, appeared to be purposeful intent. Anya was growing more concerned by the moment and was convinced that it was about to charge. She was seconds away from drawing her sword when the words of Humphrey's last clue drifted through her mind.
In the place where Tantor goes to die, Ahab's bane trumpets his call. They say that music soothes the savage heart and makes allies of us all. Music.
Without hesitation, Anya began singing the first song that came to mind.
sur le pont d'Avignon.
She was surprised to find herself singing a simple children's song she'd learned from the nuns at the orphanage in New Orleans, a song that she hadn't sung in almost 2 decades. No sooner had the first few words left her mouth than the elephant's anxiety began to subside. Astounded at the change in the animal, Anya kept singing. The elephant's trunk began to swing gently back and forth in time with the music. It took a few steps forward, bringing it out from under the shade of the eucalyptus tree. And for the first time, Anya could look into its eyes. Its all-white eyes. Anya recognized the milky cataracts for what they were and understood that the elephant was blind. The elephant hesitated in mid-step, one massive foot held up in the air like at a circus performance.
Sur le pont d'Avignon, on y danse.
The elephant continued forward until it stood directly in front of her as Anya finished her song. For a moment, the two of them stood, nose to trunk, and Anya got the sense that the massive animal was sizing her up. She had been around elephants in the past, so she had some expectation of what might be considered normal behavior. Nothing, however, could have prepared her for what happened next. The elephant lifted its trunk, and with a gentle, feather-like touch, explored the features of her face. Anya closed her eyes and held perfectly still. She could feel the animal's soft breath on her cheek and could smell the eucalyptus leaves it had been eating before her arrival. More important, she could sense the elephant's innate intelligence.
Perhaps it hasn't simply been luck that has kept it safe from poachers for so long.
The elephant huffed in her face and then withdrew. Anya opened her eyes to find it standing a few feet away, waiting.
Aren't you amazing?
She felt as though she'd passed some kind of a test, but a test of what exactly, she didn't know. Still, she had the definite sense that the elephant, Tantor, she decided to call him, wouldn't hamper her search going forward.
Now all I have to do is figure out where Humphrey left his next clue.
Anya began moving in the same direction she'd been headed before Tantor had interrupted her. Anya turned to find it looking at her.
It's not really looking at you. It's blind, remember?
She made herself turn away, and she lifted her foot to take another step. It waved its trunk at her when she turned once more, and then, quite deliberately, did it again when she was too busy staring at it to respond. She tried to tell herself it was just coincidence, but she didn't believe it.
Tantor wants me to go the other way.
The elephant turned and headed back the way it had come. Anya stood there, dumbfounded, to find herself seriously considering following a blind albino elephant deeper into the ruins.
I know elephants are smart, but isn't this taking it too far? Do I really trust that an elephant knows what I'm doing here?
When she found herself following in the elephant's wake, Anya had her answer. The elephant led Anya back the way he had come, beneath the boughs of the eucalyptus tree, and along a long, winding path with more dense undergrowth on either side, until they emerged into a sun-dappled clearing. There, half hidden in the undergrowth, was a temple.
Or at least, I think it's a temple.
It was hard to tell because of the amount of vegetation covering it, but she'd seen enough structures like this one to make an educated guess. It rose out of the bushes and trees around it, a squat structure made of large, oversized blocks of dark stone fitted together like a giant jigsaw puzzle. It immediately reminded her of the photographs she'd seen from Farini's son Lulu, which supposedly showed the remnants of the lost city that they had discovered in the midst of the Kalahari. This structure before her now had the same look and feel to it, a sense that it was so old, it had stood here and been ancient when ancient was still young.
But what is it doing here in the middle of nowhere? And who built it?
Tantor's trunk shoved her from behind. The message was clear. What she was looking for was inside that building.
Okay, I'm going.
He nodded that big, bony head and then turned his attention to the succulent green leaves hanging inches from his face and began eating.
Right. You stay here and pig out while I go exploring.
Anya dug her flashlight out of her pack and headed into the temple's interior. The building was designed like a lollipop, with a narrow entrance hallway leading to a wide circular chamber that rose two stories off the ground and seemed to be some kind of gathering place. Narrow beams of sunlight shone down from where small sections of the roof had collapsed over time, allowing her to see that much of the floor was covered with what appeared to be stone benches, arranged in a semicircle facing the far side of the room. She could see balconies lining the second story as well, providing even more seating. Anya pivoted, focusing her attention in the same direction those sitting in the chairs would have done so long ago. And that's when she saw it. A large circular image had been carved into the face of the wall ahead of her. It showed three concentric circles made up of various images set inside one another and surrounding the carved image of an oversized elephant skull in the center.
Reminds me of a Mayan calendar.
Anya moved forward until she stood directly before the design. Switching on her flashlight to get a closer look at some of the carvings, she noted how they had been cut out of the stone so that they stood in bas-relief against the backdrop behind them. She could see an antelope, a wildebeest, what looked to be a giraffe, a set of wavy lines like water, a pair of humans hunting with what appeared to be spears, a sun-like object.
Wait a minute.
Anya took off her backpack and dug into the pocket where she had stored the cloth she'd taken from the elephant tusk the night before. Unrolling it, she compared the symbols on the cloth with those on the wall. It took her only a few moments to find all five of them.
I'm looking at the next clue. All I have to do is figure out what it means.
Anya now knew that the time she had spent the night before trying to decipher some coherent story from the symbols on the antelope hide had been the wrong path to follow. Anya stepped forward until she stood before the first symbol on the cloth, the antelope. Her hand trembling, she reached out and pushed against the symbol. For a moment, nothing happened, and Anya began to suspect she'd guessed incorrectly. Then the antelope sank down into the surface of the rock behind it to disappear from view. Anya stepped back, waiting to see if something happened. When nothing did, she turned her attention to the second symbol, that of the sun. Locating that symbol, she reached out and pushed against it, this time harder. The sun immediately sank into the rock wall.
It's a lock, and the symbols are the combination.
Anya quickly ran through the rest of the symbols, the river, the elephant, and the snake, then stepped back. A symbol at the bottom of the carving popped out about an inch. Shining her flashlight on it, she saw that it was a symbol of a building, much like the one she stood in now. She reached down and pulled it, revealing the drawer-like compartment behind it. Inside was a small leather-bound journal tied shut with a piece of rawhide. Carefully, Anya lifted it out of the drawer and carried it over to one of the sunlit benches where she could get a better look at it. The rawhide was only loosely tied and came apart easily. Anya turned to the first page, which was covered with a bold scrawl from top to bottom.
I first heard of the lost city of Kalahari while traveling in Kenya with my son Malcolm. He was little more than a boy at the time, 10 or 11 years old, and we had just returned from an expedition to...
Anya's eyes widened, and she skipped ahead to a random page in the middle of the book. The same person had written there as well.
The second expedition has ended in as spectacular a failure as the first. I don't know where my calculations went wrong. Based on the coordinates in Farini's notes, I would think...
Anya leaned back. The book was Humphrey's private journal, it seemed, and given what she had read so far, it contained an accounting of everything he had done in his pursuit of the lost city of the Kalahari. It was an invaluable find, and would be particularly useful in fleshing out the backstory surrounding Humphrey's final expedition for the Chasing History's Monsters special she had promised Doug. With more than a little trepidation, she gave her attention to the journal and turned to the final page with writing on it. There, she found a note of a different kind.
We meet again. Congratulations on deciphering the clues I've left along the way. If you've managed to get to this point, I have little doubt that you'll be able to reach the final destination as well. I leave in the morning on the last leg of my own search for the lost city of the Kalahari. I'm convinced I've located it and hope to stand within its walls in just a short time. Farini's notations have proved to be a godsend. I highly doubt I would have gotten this far without them. I'm leery of becoming another Fawcett, so I've been leaving this record behind me as I go. I've been hiding each waypoint behind simple clues that will keep the rabble out, but that any adventurer worth their salt could decipher. As before, if you're reading this, things did not go as well as I hoped, and I have been unable to clean up the trail after me. If by following in my wake you discover my fate, please inform the necessary parties. There is no harsher fate than to be lost and forgotten. Robert Davis Humphrey.
Written beneath the signature was a set of map coordinates.
Tantor!
Anya stuffed Humphrey's note into her pocket and snatched up her backpack. Anya raced out of the temple and back into the sunlight. She was just in time to see Tantor crash to the ground with earth-shaking force, blood leaking from a bullet hole just above his right eye and staining his hide red.
No!
She rushed to the elephant's side, oblivious to the fact that she had dropped her backpack somewhere along the way. She fell to her knees and threw her arms around Tantor's massive head, knowing instinctively there was nothing she could do. The elephant was already dead, but its body hadn't accepted that yet. Anya watched as Tantor's eyes rolled in their sockets, the big beast struggling in vain to understand what had happened to it. The elephant went still. Anya slumped forward, her head against the animal's pebbly hide.
Oh, how touching.
Anya stiffened as she spun around, searching for and then finding Malcolm Porter. He wasn't alone, however, not that she had expected him to be. A hired gorilla stood behind him, cradling a big game rifle in his arms. Several of Porter's other goons stood behind them, standing watch over a bound and gagged Dr. Crane. For a second, Anya considered calling her sword to her and rushing the man with the rifle. Obviously, he had fired the killing shot, and she was reasonably certain she could reach him and gut him down the center before he had a chance to bring that big gun to bear. Still, she suspected even an idiot like Porter couldn't miss her at that range. It was tempting, though. She looked the shooter in the eye.
I'm gonna kill you.
You're welcome to try.
You've led us on quite the chase, Miss Creed. But that's over now. Allow me to introduce my trusted right-hand man, Bryant, who, as you can tell, is a crack shot. He well should be, being a former SAS commando. We thought we had you when Bryant had the foresight to plant that transmitter on the undercarriage of your Nissan when he flattened the tires back in the city. But then you had to get cute by having Dr. Crane switch vehicles with you. Speaking of which, the good doctor has told us about the clues my father left to the location of the lost city. Be a good girl and turn them over to me now, why don't you?
You've got to be kidding me.
Uncooperative to the end. I expected no less. So be it.
Porter extended a hand toward Bryant, who was already in the process of passing Porter something. The dart took her high in the chest, near her neck. She yanked it free and managed another step before the world seemed to tip on its side.
Search her.
Anya came to in the back of a moving vehicle with a pounding headache, probably a side effect of whatever they'd shot her with. Despite the pain, her thoughts were reasonably free of fuzziness, for which she was thankful.
Getting out of this mess is going to be hard enough.
Anya opened her eyes to find that she was slumped against the passenger door in the back seat of a moving sport utility vehicle. Her hands and feet were secured with plastic zip ties that provided very little room for movement, but were thankfully secured in front of her body rather than behind. In the front seat ahead of her were a driver and one passenger, both men in their mid-30s. She didn't recognize either of them, but the assault rifle on the dash was proof that they were in Porter's employ. In the seat next to her sat Dr. Crane. He was awake and staring out the window beside him. His hands and feet were also secured with plastic zip ties, although his were stained with dried blood. The gashes in his flesh beneath the tight black loops of plastic told of his efforts to try to free himself. He turned to face her when he realized she was awake.
Are you all right?
Yeah, where are we?
A few miles southwest of the White Valley, near as I can tell.
Any idea where we're going?
Unfortunately, no. They took what looked like a journal from you, and a few minutes later loaded us up and got underway.
Anya looked around outside the truck. They were bouncing along a barely beaten track in a westerly direction. Looking past the driver's shoulder, she counted four vehicles ahead of them. She twisted around to look behind them, saw one, possibly two more. It was hard to tell with all the bouncing around they were doing.
What do you think
we'll... Quiet back there!
Crane dutifully shut up, but Anya saw no need to cooperate. Flustered guards meant distracted guards, and distracted guards improved their chances of escape. If they wanted to get out of here, they were going to need to start taking control of the situation.
How did they find the temple?
They told the Elder they'd start killing tribespeople if he didn't tell them where you were.
He gave me up just like that?
No. Porter killed Tolo and threatened Mamegi's grandson, Nimso, first.
That son of a-
I said shut up back there!
The passenger snatched his gun off the dash and pointed it at Anya.
What are you gonna do, shoot me? Somehow I don't think Porter would be all that happy about that, especially given the trouble he went through to bring me along on this little jaunt.
The driver gave her a look, and Anya knew that she'd won that round. But the guard was more intelligent than she'd expected. He turned the gun on Crane.
So, I can't shoot you, but no one said anything about keeping your friend here alive and well. So if you open your mouth again, I'll shoot him instead. How's that sound? See that? Little cooperation and no one gets hurt.
The guard faced forward once more, but Anya was far from done. She caught Crane's attention. When he looked her way, she inclined her head toward the guard sitting in front of him and then mimed slipping her arms over the back of the seat and pulling backward. Crane's eyes widened, his mouth dropped open, and his dubious gaze flicked from the back of the guard's head to Anya and back again. She just barreled ahead as if he'd accepted her plan. Anya sat up a little straighter in her seat and put her hands in front of her stomach, palms up. The guy in the passenger seat glanced back at her, but must have been satisfied with what he saw, for he faced forward again without saying anything.
He's gonna regret that oversight.
Anya looked at Crane and saw that he was starting to sweat. If they didn't act soon, the guard would notice something wasn't right. She flashed her fingers in a countdown.
3, 2, 1.
Crane lunged forward. Anya reached into the otherwhere. The sword punched through the seat and the driver. Blood spewed down the front of his shirt. Anya left the sword where it was and brought her hands up, using the exposed edge of the blade to slash through the zip ties holding them together.
Whoa!
The now driverless vehicle immediately yawed to the right, careening off the road into the scrublands around them. Even worse, the dead weight of the driver's foot pushed the accelerator down.
No, you don't!
Anya freed her hands and lunged to grab the steering wheel. No longer pinned in place by the blade, the dead man's body slumped to the side. A quick glance to her right showed her Crane was still fighting with the man in the passenger seat. Porter's man was turning blue in the face as he alternately pulled against Crane's arms and flailed in search of the gun he'd dropped. The car bounced off a boulder on its now runaway course.
Time to settle the odds.
While fighting the steering wheel with her left hand, Anya brought her right arm up as high as it would go. The passenger slumped.
What happened to the other...
Crane got a look at what Anya's sword had done to the other guard. The vehicle continued to accelerate. Anya knew she had to get into the front seat and gain better control of the vehicle, or this ride was going to be over sooner rather than later.
Henry, I need you to cut my feet loose.
After a moment, she felt him sawing at the zip ties around her ankles with a knife. She didn't have time to wonder where he'd got it from before the ties parted. Anya braced herself and then grabbed the shirt of the dead man behind the wheel and tried to drag him to the right. Crane saw what she was doing and added his strength to the task. Between them, they were able to drag the body out of the driver's seat and dump it onto the unconscious man in the passenger seat. The SUV began to slow as soon as the dead man's foot was pulled off the accelerator. Anya slipped between the seats and into the driver's position, ramming her foot on the gas. Anya counted at least three vehicles in hot pursuit. They needed a distraction. She glanced at the men in the seat next to her.
Henry, get rid of them!
What? What are you saying?
One is dead and the other will kill us when he wakes up.
Okay, as soon as you slow down.
I'm not slowing down, Henry!
But...
just open the door and push them out.
I can't do that!
If it makes you feel any better, we'll try to dump them out on a nice grassy spot, all right?
The unconscious guard began to stir.
Henry!
Henry leaned across the front seat, reaching for the door handle.
On the count of three. One, two, three!
Henry popped open the door. Anya tried her best to help him, pushing with one hand and steering with the other. The dead body slid out easily enough, but suddenly their former captor's eyes popped open. Henry tumbled back into the rear seat. The man's hands shot out to grab the door jamb and Anya's right arm. Anya tried to pull herself free, but he wasn't letting go. Every tug she made pulled him another inch back into the vehicle.
Baobab! Baobab!
What?
Look out for the massive baobab!
Anya jerked the wheel to the right. The driver's side mirror was sheared off, and still their unwanted passenger held on.
Do something, Henry!
Anya swerved to avoid a group of boulders. Henry grabbed the other man's hand and tried to pull him off her, but the guy's grip was like a vice, and Henry just didn't have the strength. So he bit the man's thumb. Their unwanted passenger lost his grip on Anya. Anya jerked the wheel first to the left, and then immediately back again to the right. Finally, the henchman went tumbling out the door. Anya glanced in the rearview mirror, trying to get a glimpse of what had happened to him.
Shit!
Her view was filled by the dark shape of one of the other SUVs.
Damn it!
The wheel jerked in her hands, but Anya fought the turn with everything she had and got them running straight again.
They're going to shoot!
A bullet shattered the rear window and embedded itself in the back of the front passenger seat. Anya continued charging toward the rocky ridge line she'd picked out as their destination, just a few hundred yards left. The other SUV moved in for a second strike from the side, but Anya tapped the brakes and cut the wheel hard in that direction. The impact was enough to push the other vehicle several feet to the side, over a termite mound, and into the air. Anya hit the gas again, trying to regain some of the lead they had lost. In the rearview mirror, she saw two other SUVs trying to close the distance, intent on boxing her in. She cut the wheel to the right to avoid a massive boulder, burst through a dense clump of acacia thorn bushes, and found herself driving along the crumbling edge of a long, dried-out riverbank.
No, 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 no!
She felt the SUV lurch as the tires began to slip and spin. Anya threw the wheel in the opposite direction, but the slide was already in motion.
Brace yourself!
The ground beneath the passenger side of the SUV gave way entirely. The floor became the ceiling, became the wall, became the floor, became the wall again, as the vehicle came to a crashing halt in a great billowing cloud of dust. Blood flowed down one side of Anya's face from a cut across the edge of her forehead, but the rest of her seemed intact. Satisfied that she wasn't going to injure herself just by moving, Anya took a second to make sense of her surroundings. The SUV had come to a stop on its roof, its wheels still spinning. Broken glass covered the floor around her, and the door closest to her was crumpled and bent into the driver's seat. The door wouldn't budge when she tried to open it. Anya crawled over to the other side on her hands and knees, doing her best to avoid jamming herself with any of the crumpled safety glass that littered her way. Then she tried the other door. It too was stuck, though it didn't look quite as bent or damaged. She turned around so that she was facing the door with her legs out in front of her and braced herself on her elbows. Finally, the door opened enough that she'd be able to twist her way through it. She heard movement behind her and turned to see Henry crawling through the space between the seats. He looked dazed and weary, but physically uninjured.
Come on! We've got to get out of here!
The two of them writhed and wriggled their way out of the narrow opening. Then they crawled a short distance from the truck just to be safe.
Can you run?
Sure. Do you have a plan?
Anya pointed toward the ridgeline 20 yards away.
We've got to get out of here before Porter and his men catch up to us. Our best bet is to head up into those rocks and see if we can lose them in the canyons.
Right. Sounds good.